Good morning. It's 7:01. I'm Austin Peterson. It's time to rise in freedom. Welcome to the Wake Up America show. Boston University scientists were revealed to be creating a new form of COVID in a lab that has the potential to be the most deadly form of the disease yet. This new research has this libertarian asking the question of whether gain-of-function research should be banned entirely. What do you think about it? And who are the most popular politicians in America? I'll give you three guesses as to the top one, but if you guess Joe Biden, you probably need a mental health check yourself. If you want to send in a guess, you can text us at 573-319-1586. And at 7:30 this morning, Jefferson City Councilman and mayoral candidate Ron Fitzwater joins me to discuss one of the least reported big Senate races in the country. Attorney General Eric Schmidt faces again off against the heir to the Bush beer family fortune in a race that deserves more time and discussion. We'll talk about that. And what makes a good politician? With the future mayor of Missouri's first city. And Camelia Peterson joins me at 8 a.m. to talk about a Missouri woman who escaped a murderer's sex dungeon in an insane tale of rape and violence. We'll talk to her about that, and we'll also discuss comments by conservative pundit Matt Walsh saying that anime is satanic. And he's right. Plus, whoa, bear. I've got a video of a mountain climber being attacked by a bear that will shiver your timbers, as well as a woman who recorded herself being gored by a bison on her TikTok account. One you feel sorry for, the other one, maybe not so much. And finally, does libertarianism cause autism? I'm joined by liberal salon writer Matt Roja, who calls himself a left libertarian and has been diagnosed on the spectrum. We'll discuss how libertarians view the world differently than most people and many more issues on today's show. Don't forget, today is Twitch Tuesday. I'm asking all of our friends of the show who can to join us over at the account at twitch.com/streamliberty. That is Stream Liberty. And please don't forget to link your Amazon Prime account and gift us a subscription there. Of course, you can always watch the show on any platform you please. All that and more on today's episode of the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Glad to have you here. Everybody's joining us live and in person, right? Of course, listening to us live in the morning, nice and early. A lot of people do listen to us on the podcast later. We do cut the audio from each show and upload it to Podbean. The Wake Up America Show is available on all of your streaming platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many other areas. So if you want to listen to us later, you can easily. Of course, you can always watch the replays live on all of the platforms that we're on. All right, first up, this big story today, outrage, as Boston University scientists were revealed to be creating a new strain of COVID-19 in a laboratory. I kid you not. Boston University scientists were condemned for, quote, playing with fire after this news story broke yesterday. It was revealed that this team had created a hybrid virus combining Omicron and the original Wuhan strain that killed 80% of mice in a study. This revelation exposes how dangerous virus manipulation research continues to go on, even right here in the United States. And of course, this is all in the backdrop with the fears that this pandemic may have begun with this gain of function research. A leading scientist in the Israeli government was asked about this. His name was Shmuel Shapira, who said that this should be totally forbidden. It's playing with fire. What do you think? Should this form of research be forbidden? Send us a text, 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. The practice has been largely restricted, but not banned in the United States since 2017. Gain of research, function research, for those who might not be aware, is where viruses are purposefully manipulated to be more infectious or deadly. And this is thought to be at the center of the pandemic's origin, that this began in a lab in Wuhan. It's not 100% confirmed yet. I don't know if it ever will be, which I think is one of the biggest problems with this COVID-19 pandemic, because Honestly, I think finding out the question of whether or not it was done intentionally or whether it was done on accident is a very big, important question. What do you think? Do you agree with me? Send me a text, 573-319-1586. What it bothers me that there doesn't seem to be any push to find out the answer to that question. Now, maybe there's some skullduggery going on. Maybe the CIA is working on something like that. But quite frankly, it seems as if the federal government is much more interested in persecuting people who flooded the Capitol on January 6th than they are in going after the people who unleashed this pandemic on us all. Now, a chemist at Rutgers University in New Brunswick, New Jersey, spoke on the record about this and said, Dr. Richard Ebright, who said that this research is a clear example of gain-of-function research, what the Boston University scientists were doing. He says, if we're to avoid a next lab-generated pandemic, it's imperative that the oversight of enhanced potential pandemic pathogen research be strengthened. Wow, say that 10 times fast. But again, Boston University scientists creating a new man-made COVID strain, which killed 80% of the mice that were infected with it. None of the mice died from the milder Omicron variant alone, but when they took, the scientists took the Omicron variant and mixed it with the new, original form of COVID-19, it killed 80% of those mice. Now, in this research, this new research that has come out, it hasn't been peer reviewed. The researchers extracted the spike protein from Omicron and inserted it into the older, the original wild-type strain that first emerged in Wuhan at the start of this pandemic. The researchers looked at how mice fared against the new hybrid strain compared to the Omicron variant, but when rodents were exposed to that version, again, 80% kill rate. Imagine what would happen if this happened to get out. And they're doing this at Boston University. Frankly, I'm going to say that I think that this is one example where I might have to put my libertarian hat aside and say, this probably should not be allowed. As a matter of fact, I'd love to hear a good argument for why this should be allowed. This type of research is extremely dangerous. Now, am I a scientist? No, right? But should we trust the experts after the last 2 years? I'm thinking not. It seems to me to be quite a dangerous procedure and the type of thing that, you know, only in the strictest set of circumstances, perhaps on an island far away from the United States, should something like this ever be done. It doesn't strike me as a good idea. What do you think, though? Is there ever a good reason why we should allow something like this? Should it be banned? Or should I put my libertarian hat back on and say, no, we need to allow it because maybe this type of research can be done to help us in the future? But frankly, I don't know that I trust the experts on this one. I don't know if I trust the science on this one, to be quite honest. I don't know if I believe the science. How about that one? Send us a text, 573-319-1586. One listener texted in and said, it's Quest from Brooklyn, said, if chemical weapons are forbidden, so should gain-of-function research. It has potentially more devastating impact. What is the justification? Good question, Quest. Another listener texted in, Wood Hippie says, too busy investigating Orange Man or anyone with anything to do with him. Wood Hippie, still no jab. Well, Wood Hippie, thank you very much for texting in this morning. I'm about to sneeze, so might have to mute my microphone. Oh, there, and it went past. Okay. Well, there we go. I got the new form of the COVID. You can, again, text us at 573-319-1586. Don't forget, today is Tuesdays on Twitch, so we are asking all of our listeners to join us over on twitch.com/streamliberty. We'd be super grateful for you over there. DeCorpse 111th over on Twitch says that they are weapons developers. Just like the military-industrial complex, they are designing future weapons for sale. Cliff Wilkinson in there with a very affirmative statement says, science sucks. Another listener texted in and said, DeCorpse continued on and says, these diseases are weapons and they will be used to affect elections. That's Corey from YouTube. Dan Snow messaged in and says, in my opinion, any development as such should be researched but tested somewhere uninhabited, in my opinion. That's what I was thinking as well. Good morning, Josh Douglas. Thank you so much for joining us as well. You can, again, contact us by sending us a text or by joining us over on Twitch. The text line, 573-319-1586. 1586. We love to hear from our listeners. It's a beautiful morning here in mid-Missouri in Jefferson City, and we're looking forward to having my next guest, Ron Fitzwater, joining us this morning at 7:30. This gain-of-function research that Boston University scientists are doing, to me, strikes at the heart of American liberty, because without life, we have no liberty. It strikes me as deeply, deeply troublesome that while we are still trying to determine the origins of COVID-19, that scientists are still conducting this type of dangerous research in these biochemical labs. 40 new biochemical labs that handle dangerous viruses like this one are being built right now as we speak around the world. More than 40 facilities have either been built or have gone into construction since 2020, predominantly against Asia. This is insane. Many countries felt like they got caught flat-footed by COVID, and they basically are saying that they want to get ahead of the next devastating outbreak by studying pathogens that pose a threat to humans. Studying pathogens, sure. Now, experiments at these labs all usually involve things like tinkering with animal viruses, they say, to advance treatments and vaccines that could be used in a future outbreak. I don't know. I don't know if I trust the science, guys. Do you trust the science? If you don't trust the scientists, if you don't trust the science, don't worry. Who are you going to believe? Anthony Fauci or Austin Peterson? I guess it depends on your political viewpoint on these things. But quite frankly, I find this to be terrifying. It probably needs to come to a stop. But I don't know how we stop them from creating all these new bio labs in Asia, right? How do you stop something like this? What do you think? Again, send us a text, 573-319-1586, with your thoughts on that one. Chris Petty says, research anti-venom and SARS, University of Pittsburgh and Bing Liu. I'll check that out during the commercial break. Tony Allegra says, I guess it's fashionable now for random millionaires or billionaires to buy social media platforms. Kanye buying Parler. Yeah, that was big news yesterday. Kanye West, or I guess as he likes to be known, Ye, it was announced, bought the platform of Parler, which is sort of interesting. I mean, I didn't see that coming. I didn't have that on my bingo card for the week. But Parler, if you remember, was that very conservative, I believe it was the Mercer family initially set up Parler. And Parler went down because their servers were located on Amazon servers, which decided not to carry it because it was mostly Republicans, Donald Trumpers, and people like that who were using Parler. So Amazon pulled the rug out from underneath Parler, and Parler was removed from app stores like Google Apps and from Android, so you weren't able to use it on your phones as an app. You could always use it on a mobile browser, but of course it's not quite as usable there. But the news was yesterday that Kanye apparently, or Kanye West, or Ye as he's known now, bought the platform, which, you know, it didn't give me much reason to feel confident in the future of this platform. But just because when I got the update yesterday that Kanye had purchased it, well, the problem was that the way that they sent out the email to announce that it had gone out was they basically, instead of BCC, for those of you who aren't familiar with email, you can send someone an email directly. You can carbon copy someone, which is basically including someone else in the email, and then they can see who the email went to, and they can see their email address. And then there's a blind carbon copy. It's called a BCC, for those who don't know. And when Parler sent out the news yesterday that when they sent out the news that Kanye had bought the platform, they forgot to, they sent it out in batches. And some of the people who are VIPs on the platform, I know I'm going to sound, you know, dorky, but I'm a VIP on Parler. The people who were VIPs were sent in a batch email, but they forgot to blind carbon copy all of us. And they sent everybody's email out to the whole list without checking. So basically a bunch of celebrities and then me got each other's email addresses, which is kind of cool. I did want some of those people's email addresses, but then somebody actually took a picture of that and then shared it. And it was kind of a mess. So anyways, it's going to be a great show today. We've got Camelia Peterson. We've got Ron Fitzwater. We've got Matt Roja, liberal writer from Salon. I'm making an effort to try and get more lefties on the Wake Up America show. What do you think about that? Yeah, we're going to have our first big liberal writer from Salon magazine on the show today. He calls himself a left libertarian, and he says he's on the spectrum, has autism. And we're going to ask the question, does libertarianism cause autism? Or maybe the other way around. When we get back, who is the most popular politician in America? Can you guess the number one most popular politician? Send in your guess. The text 573-319-1586 or answer over there on Twitch. We're over on twitch.com/streamliberty today. Send me your guess. Who do you think is the most popular politician in America? Talk about that when we get back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning, it's 7:22, and you're watching and listening to the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. Well, we've got a lot of responses from our listeners on who they think the most popular politician in America is, and some people are responding to the last segment where we were talking about how Boston University scientists had created a new form of COVID in a lab, one that killed 80% of mice that were infected with it. It's pretty crazy stuff. Some people had sent in some text messages about that as well. Wood Hippie sent us in a text, and he said that he thinks that the outsourcing of anything to China is absurd, ignorant, and unbelievably short-sighted. Agree with you there, Hippie. China is making bioweapons with our money to infect us. Insanity. Amen, Wood Hippie. Amen. Big cheer for Wood Hippie this morning. Yeah, give him a big cheer. Another listener texted in for the very first time from the 507. Good morning to you, sir or ma'am. They said it's probably a means of population control to manage climate change. It wouldn't surprise me one bit to find out that that's what people like Bill Gates and others were trying to do. Another listener texted in and said, look up Plum Island, New York, just off the coast of Lyme County, Connecticut, where the first case of Lyme disease was discovered. Plum Island is where the U.S. government was experimenting with tick diseases. Another would not shock me at all. Another listener texted in and says, not bipolar, yet ye buys Parlor on a whim. Salon? Question mark. Licks chops. Oh yeah, we've got a Salon writer going to be joining us today, Matt Roja, at 8:30 this morning to discuss life as a liberal. And does libertarianism cause autism? My next guest just walked into the studio right now. Go ahead, have a seat, Ron. I'll bring you in the next segment. Get comfortable over there. Another listener texted in this morning and said, when Amazon, Google, and Apple all conspired to take down Parler, I had a sickening wave of fear strike me. It was an eye-opening experience that reinforced what all the, quote, crazy conspiracy theorists I listened to we're saying. Amen, brother. I agree with you completely. You can text the show as well at 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. We'd love to hear from you. Today's Tuesday, and we do Tuesdays on Twitch. So if you want to watch the show online live, we'd love it if you would join us over at twitch.com/streamliberty this morning. All right, let's get to the news. Recent polling from a mainstream polling outfit, a Harris poll in the Harvard University Center for American Political Studies, says that who do you think it is has the number one highest popularity rating in the United States? That's right. Ron DeSantis. That's right. The highest net popularity rating in the United States is Ron DeSantis. In the survey, that's right, participants were asked how they felt about prominent politicians in the United States, giving responses like, you know, very favorable, unfavorable, extremely unfavorable, never heard of them, or things like that. DeSantis ranked the highest of them all. But when the politicians are ranked by all of the results, there's a pattern that emerges, and it goes from very, very red politician to very, very blue politician at the bottom. Ron DeSantis had a +6 in the poll as the most popular politician in America. Number two kind of surprised me, and I wonder what you would think about this one. Maybe you agree with this, but I think some of you are going to kind of be like, meh. Number two was Mike Pence, former Vice President Mike Pence, with +4 ended up in the survey. But I guess he's got a lot of fans around the country, and a lot of people like him. Very conservative, Mike Pence. And then number three, Senator Tim Scott came in, and then number four, President Donald Trump. As the fourth most popular politician in America. And I like what Tali Owens had to say on the live stream when she was talking about why she thought Donald Trump was actually the most popular politician in the United States. But her reasoning was this, was that not only do Republicans love him, but liberals love him as well, because they talk about him nonstop. It doesn't matter what leftist news network you turn it on, they're going to have some Trump coverage that day. And I'll tell you honestly, I've worked in a lot of mainstream news organizations, and I got to say that whether or not they're liberals or whatever, they love the ratings that they get from when they talk about Donald Trump. They want the ratings. So I'll bet you anything that if you were to work at CNN behind the scenes as like a mail clerk or something like that, they talk about Donald Trump nonstop. That's all they can talk about is Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump. If Donald Trump ever went away, they would hate it because he's good for their ratings. That's why he's on there all the time. If you turn on MSNBC for whatever reason on accident, or if you're walking through an airport and you see CNN, which is, I know, the only way a lot of you actually do watch CNN, you're going to see them talking about Donald Trump because, you know what? They want ratings. So that's why liberals do love Donald Trump. Coming in fifth place, this was one that I just can't jive with. And I, you know what? I know that there's a lot of right wingers that actually do like this guy, and a lot of former left wingers that came over to the Republican Party in recent years. Senator Bernie Sanders. You know, I think the reason why Senator Bernie Sanders has so much popularity is probably due to the fact that he does quite frequently diagnose the problems in our society quite correctly. He points out a lot of the problems that we have with the wealth disparity in the United States. Now, he thinks that the wealth disparity is caused by greedy capitalists and corporations doing their corporation stuff, and they make money, right? The completely incoherent arguments against capitalism. But I think that the thing with Bernie Sanders is that at the end of the day, you know, he's going to advocate for more government. He's going to advocate for, you know, more hair of the dog that bit you, if you will, not for a limited government solution. He's going to advocate for more big government. So assesses the problem correctly and then proceeds to screw up the solution. And you see this a lot. And that's why there's so much overlap, I think, with politicians who you might call right-wing populists, whereas Bernie Sanders is more of a left-wing populist. A lot of right-wing populists look at what Bernie Sanders has to say, and they agree with him. They agree with a lot of the same problems that they diagnose. And you know what? I've got kind of an anti-elite bias myself. I identify with a lot of the views that populists hold in terms of their gripes and their complaints. I just don't agree with the solutions. I don't think more government is going to be the solution to our problems. So if that makes me an elitist, well, so be it. All right, let's talk to one of the elites of Jefferson City. He probably wouldn't like me calling him that, but he is. He's an elite of Missouri, if you will. But he's a very down-to-earth guy. I like him very much. Very conservative, Ron Fitzwater. He's a Jefferson City councilman. He's also running for the mayor of the first city of Missouri. We'll talk to him about the biggest little race happening that nobody's talking about. This huge U.S. Senate race in Missouri. And it's getting just passed over. Everybody's talking about J.D. Vance in Ohio, Blake Masters in Arizona. We need to talk about Missouri, damn it. And we're going to talk about that when we get back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. It's 8:05. You're watching the Wake Up America Show with Austin Peterson. It's time to rise and freedom. All righty. Let's get everybody's favorite guest in here, our twice-a-week guest, a very rare camellia, joining us live and on camera right now. Good morning, CJ. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Doing well. Thank you. I'm warm.
I know. It's 29 degrees here in Jefferson City. I don't know how it is down. You're in Southwest Missouri right now, aren't you?
Yes, and it froze last night, so all the houseplants have been brought in. I made a pot of chili, and so, you know, I'm in my sweatshirt and all bundled up this morning.
Well, good. Glad you're staying warm this morning, CJ. Glad to have you here on the program. First of all, you were just a little comment on your comment there. We just had Jefferson City Councilman Ron Fitzwater in there talking about the Schmidt versus Bush Valentine race. And I was saying how it's not getting enough attention. Nobody's talking about it. But you think that's a good thing, huh?
I do think that's a good thing in this case, maybe overall, because I can understand, you know, kind of wanting to be on the in the national field as far as the attention for your political race. But at the same time, the Democratic Party overall, I don't think really is gung-ho about Trudy Bush Valentine. And the more attention we draw to that and get, you know, sympathy for that and outside funding and everything else, I think that, you know, we should just let things be and, you know, let her keep going because she's going to lose either way. And also, if you think about it, the other races that are getting a lot of national attention are not necessarily for good reasons. So I don't know that we want that either.
Okay, good point there. You can text the show this morning with your thoughts at 573-319-1586. That's 573-319-1586. All right, this story was wild, Camellia, when I read this yesterday in the New York Post. Missouri police are investigating whether this sicko who allegedly held a woman captive for a month as his sex slave tormented other victims. What is this story?
So apparently a week or so ago, a woman had escaped from this house and gone to, ran barefoot down the street, just barely dressed, telling neighbors that she needed help, that she'd been being held captive as a sex slave. And I think one, and this is in Excelsior Springs, which is Kansas City area. And one neighbor, you know, tried to help and told her that she was going to call the police. And the woman was like, no, don't do that because he'll kill us both if you do that. And she went on down the street and she finally did allow somebody to help her, get her covered up. And they called the police, investigated. So apparently this man had picked this woman up, in early September, somewhere in Kansas City there, and had taken her and been holding her captive in his basement and doing God knows what to her, but, you know, sexually abusing her and who knows what else. She had told the neighbors that he had already killed some of her friends. And so there are rumors going around, you know, serial killer rumors going around. I don't think police have been able to verify any of that. So there's some doubt as to whether or not that actually happened. But crazy, crazy stuff. And I will tell you, when I was reading this, what really jumped out to me, aside from the horror of the whole thing, was that the reason that she was able to leave the house was because he took his son to school. And I was like, oh my Lord, there was a child in the house. That's even, I just blows my mind. Anyway, so the police were waiting for him whenever he came back from dropping his kid off at school.
Wow, that's insane. You can text the show at 573-319-1586. So they caught the guy, but it wasn't the first time that this guy had done this. So they found the one woman who escaped, but there were other people who were there as well, just to be clear.
I'm not very clear on that. I've not found anything. I know that that's kind of what this woman, the victim, had been saying. And I looked at a couple of other reports on it, and I'm not really seeing anything that confirms those stories. So I don't think that they know that for sure yet. But she, you know, she'd been, you know, abused. I think she said that he had beat her with a whip, and she had marks on her body that, you know, basically verified that. So yeah, that's, I don't, you know, but there were, I think, probably warrants out for his arrest already on traffic related charges where he had not shown up for court. They actually brought him in initially on some kind of animal endangerment or, you know, some sort of charge related to animals, not even anything related to, you know, this woman. I mean, they have obviously charged him with, you know, rape and other things, kidnapping now.
Wow. Pretty creepy stuff. I read that on the New York Post yesterday. This gentleman, Hazlett, 39, was charged with rape, kidnapping, and assault. All right. Well, let's move on to something perhaps a little bit more comedic. Let's move on to something a little less.
It's like the stuff of movies in Missouri real life. It's crazy.
Yeah, no thanks. It's time to move on to a little bit lighter topic. Yesterday, I know you love to talk about Matt Walsh. He's your favorite conservative commentator. He's a right-wing Republican, very conservative commentator. So, you know, because, you know, he's extremely conservative, you would think that you're a big fan, aren't you, Camellia?
Oh, huge fan. You know, huge me and fan. Matt Walsh were like this.
Well, I mean, you know, you are cut from the same cloth, right? Very conservative, right? Very right wing, very Republican. I mean, you know, I the reason why we're talking about him was because yesterday he was trending on Twitter. He's a host over the Daily Wire. He was asked about his thoughts on anime, which, you know, I know that your daughters, I think, are big fans of anime. We were just at the Japanese festival together a few weeks ago. And his response to this was that he says, I think it's all satanic. I have no argument for it. I have no argument for why it's satanic. It just seems that way. Your thoughts, Camellia?
Well, my very first thought was, you know, Matt Walsh works for the Daily Wire, which is Ben Shapiro's outlet. I was like, Matt, Ben would like a word about your feelings. You know, facts don't care about your feelings and all that.
Right.
But no, anyway, no, I just think it's kind of funny because, you know, Matt is actually right on a lot of things that he talks about. And I agree with him on those things. But he goes off the reservation sometimes with stuff like this. And it's like, really, really, let's not do that. He's had some other things that.
Have you noticed though, the trend though on the right is to call everything satanic. Like this is satanic. That is satanic. This is evidence of Satan. It does feel a little bit like we're kind of going traipsing back over that 80s satanic panic kind of territory in these modern days. Why do you think this is?
I don't know. You know, I think it is looking for a way to label something in a way that makes it scary because you think it's not a good influence. I mean, mostly this has to do with what you want to expose your kids to, right? Because when we think about other things that have been labeled in certain ways, I was looking at a conversation actually with Hannah Cox and a couple other of our mutual friends, and they were talking about, you know, what it had been in their childhood. And for her, and I remember hearing this too, you know, you always got warned about things that were new age, you know?
Mm-hmm. So yes,
were,
a new age, know, that was satanic. The trail,
the new age thing. You know, Harry Potter was satanic and, you know, it was going to lead you down the path of darkness if you got involved or were exposed to any of these things. And I think it's kind of that way of scaring people into not doing it.
Yeah, no kidding. What do you think about this? Send us do you like anime? Send me a text 573-319-1586. I think the thing about it that really struck me, the reason why I thought it was worthy of chatting about this morning, is that the tweet that I shared with you, this gentleman named Oliver Gia says that I know he's probably half joking about anime being satanic, but this vibe overall is emblematic of why American conservatives will never have a monopoly over entertainment. They immediately dismiss anything they're not familiar with, which is the death of creativity. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. We've talked about this before and that, you know, conservatives are always behind the ball when it comes to the arts and to all of these kinds of things that are mediums for what shape culture in a lot of ways. And what's funny is a lot of people really like, you know, Tolkien and some of these authors who did things like Lord of the Rings or what's the other one I'm trying to think of? But anyway, you know, and some of those, well, C.S. Lewis and some of his writings. And what's funny is some of those writings that are from Christian writers also include some pagan elements in them. Those are kind of ignored a lot of times, but I think that, you know, those writers who are very Christian recognized that this creative, this way to express your imagination and this creativity are tools to use in telling the bigger story.
Mm. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking to Camellia Peterson, editor of the LibertarianRepublic.com. We're talking about the new satanic panic of the 2020s. Hey, Camellia, I know I'm going to offend people when I say this, but you know what? Nobody ever cares about like my feelings or offending me. So I'm just going to say it. I can't take somebody seriously when they tell me that something's a work of Satan. You know what I mean? Like, and the thing is that it's very rarely in person. I mean, if you came to me like that in person, you know, I would laugh in your face. And it's just because it's just like saying, you know, ghosts or demons or something like that. And I know that, you know, where we live, we are the minority and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, like, when somebody approaches you and says something like that or says something like that, you know, satanic, do you roll your eye?
Okay. Yes. Sort of. Yes. They both move. Thanks.
They both move. Okay.
But no, so yeah, you know, the thing is even within Christianity, there is a lot of debate over what is Satan? You know, what form does Satan take? How do you define Satan? And I think it's the same impulse for there to be something bigger that we can make responsible for the things that we don't understand. And Satan is one of those things. Are there bad things that happen? Are there bad influence? It must be Satan. Sometimes and even within Christianity, my dad was always kind of on this side of things. You know, the approach is that he always kind of said that Satan wasn't this big bad boogeyman out there that's down in hell and directing his minions to do, you know, this and that and interfere with people's lives and influence them to do things. His approach was more that, you know, Satan was like, we are our own worst enemy. You know, we look into the mirror and, you know, if we're looking for Satan, look into the mirror because it's, you know, that evil is in all of us. That's a way deep
discussion, but you know, then I think the response to that they would say is that the greatest trick the devil ever played was convincing the world that he didn't exist, as if that's like some kind of great insight. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I just kind of feel like it's actually the opposite. The greatest trick ever played upon humans was convincing the world that the devil exists.
Well, think about it. If somebody else or some other entity is responsible for your behavior, that means that you're really not responsible for your behavior. And that's probably the most difficult thing of all, is accepting that, you know what? We are responsible for how we behave, how we treat others, how we live, whether or not we are good people, moral people. And it comes down to us. And that's, you know, nobody likes to really do that, but that's, I think we're better when we do that.
I mean, and that's kind of like the promise of salvation too. And that's why, you know, not to bring it back to politics or anything like that. That's why, you know, you can see, you know, Herschel Walker, who, you know, more likely than not paid for a couple of abortions, and, you know, his sins are wiped away and forgiven because, you know, all you have to do is accept Christ as your Lord and Savior to have your sins forgiven. But the rest of us, we have to actually pay for our sins here on earth.
Well, true. Although I'll say, when you talk about Herschel Walker and that approach to things, that does kind of make me think of, we sort of, and this is this, we find this on the Christian right too, to a certain extent, when you're talking about politics, we sort of forgive the past when it's convenient for us. Mm-hmm. You know, if we want to use it against them, we'll, like the left is doing right now with Herschel Walker, you know, like, oh, 10 years ago, you know, he did this, therefore he's bad and people can't change. And, you know, the right does it too. They'll use the past against people, but when it suits their purposes, when it's somebody that they like and they want to see win, then we're like, people can change. Yes. They can change parties. They can just, I'm sorry, but thank God people can change. And so I, you know, when I came into politics, I am constantly, even within Missouri politics, you know, you talk about different players, and I'm constantly being told, oh, you know, be careful about that person, and getting all of the gossip and the feedback about, you know, why not to trust certain people. And I'm kind of glad I haven't been in this for a long time, because I come in and honestly, I hear all that, but then I still take that person at face value for what I see right now.
Yeah, same here, same here. But it's just, you know, life is a lot easier when you can, you know, push your sins and problems and malfeasances and troubles onto some kind of another entity. You know, it would be nice if, you know, sins could be forgiven, but you know what? The justice system here says you still have to go to jail if you commit a crime. So probably a good thing that we have that earthly authority supersedes heavenly authority.
Well, that's true. Although, you know, in the end, I hope there is room for restoration for, you know, almost everybody, for almost everything. I think that's
same thing.
Restoration is good.
Everything can be forgiven, even being a Democrat. Camelia Peterson, editor of thelibertarianrepublic.com. Great conversation. I'm sure we offended pretty much everybody today. Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate you very much.
Have a good day, everybody.
All right. Does libertarianism cause autism? Or is it the other way around? Liberal writer over at Salon Magazine, Matt Rosia, is going to join me at 8:30. You don't want to miss that discussion. Is it going to turn into a debate? We'll see. He calls himself a left libertarian. Ugh. Run and hide. We'll be back on the Wake Up America Show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. It's 8:25. It's time to rise in freedom. Thanks for watching and listening to the Wake Up America show with Austin Peterson. All right, it's time for some Twitter weirdness. Yes, we haven't had any Twitter weirdness this morning. It's time to head on over to our next scene and watch this video that's trending this morning on Twitter of a woman who videotaped herself being gored by a bison. I kid you not. Gored by a bison. Rebecca Clark shared this video on TikTok. It's gotten over 2 million views. It's now trending. Let's take a look at this video right now. Here we go. Solo hiking, she says, at Caprock Canyons in Texas. She was charged and gored by a bison because she was so close to passing them on a trailway. She says they are beautiful creatures protected by the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, where the park has restored the Charles Goodnight bison herd. She's posting to support safety while enjoying Texas state parks. Okay, here we go. Watch until the end. Here we go.
Keep going. I don't want to deal with them. I just want to go by. Come on, keep going. I just want to get by, okay? Thank you.
Walk a little close there, lady.
Didn't want to go through the bushes again.
Okay, there's going to be some language here, just FYI.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. There you go. There
you go. All right, one more time here. What are you doing?
I don't want to deal with them.
Yeah.
I just want to go by.
Then why are you walking so close to them, lady?
I just want to get by, okay? Thank you. I appreciate it. Didn't want to go through the bushes again. Oh, shit. Oh, my God.
You got gored by the bison there. The bison rammed her back, gored her, and threw into a mesquite bush where she laid for 50 minutes until help arrived. She had limited phone access, but she did manage to get the TikTok video there. Can you believe it? Yeah, she did. Well, at least she got the TikTok video. That was nice of her to do. there's another video that's actually trending this morning on Twitter as well. We'll have to click on over to it here. This was a bear attack. A man was doing some mountain climbing. It looks like in China, and he was attacked by a bear. This one is also trending this morning. Pretty wild stuff. Let's head on over to that scene. Take a listen. And check this video out. Watch this. All right. Now, listen, do I feel bad for the bear guy? Sure. Scary stuff. You know, you're doing some mountain climbing. Totally fine. But the bison lady, you know what? She got what she deserved. She messed with the bison and she got the horn. All right. When we come back, liberal writer for Salon Magazine, Matt Rozsa, is going to join us. That's right. Our first in the Lefty series. I've been reaching out to lefties across the spectrum, and this one is on the spectrum, to join me on this show. We'll have some debates, we'll have some discussions, we'll have some fun, but we'll answer the question, the serious question, does libertarianism cause autism? All that and more when we get back on the Wake Up America show at wakeupamericashow.com. Good morning. It's 8:34 and it's time to rise in freedom. You're watching the Wake Up America show with Austin Peterson at wakeupamericashow.com. Don't forget, today is Tuesday, which means it's Tuesdays on Twitch. Join us over on our Twitch account at twitch.com/streamliberty. If you want to send in a text, you can do that at 573-319-1586. We'd love to hear from you at 573-319-1586. All right, starting with my lefty liberal series, I thought I'd take it easy on you guys and get someone who calls himself a left libertarian on for our series and discussions and debates with the other side of the aisle. Joining me now, live on camera, is a writer for Salon Magazine. His name is Matt Rozsa, and he's joining us live right now. Good morning, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up America show. Glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. I must say, I may have referred to myself as a left libertarian in a past article. I don't believe I did so recently, though.
Oh, okay.
The reason we're here is to discuss a series of articles I've written about autism issues. And I actually just sent you a Reddit link related to that, because do you want to discuss this or do I?
Go ahead, Matt.
No, we were basically Reddit has 5 months ago, Ron Swanson is autistic. And this person who posted on the R fictional psychology thread just offers the theory that Ron Swanson may be on the autism spectrum, which amused me because the reason I reached out is anecdotally, and I must emphasize what I'm saying right now is purely anecdotal. I know a lot of people who are autistic and are also libertarian. And I just thought it was interesting because a lot of my close friends are actually libertarians who are also on the autism spectrum. I want to emphasize from the get-go, these are not people I've interviewed. This is not in reference to any of my recent articles. This is, it's sort of like a weird intersection of the apolitical and the political in my personal life because, and by the way, if you want, if a deaf, and so, yeah, I just thought it was interesting because we've in the past had casual conversations about politics. I have no idea if you're on the spectrum or not, but I thought it was interesting that in my experience, I get along with a lot of people and identify with them because we share this experience of being neurodivergent. And that goes beyond politics. I'm hearing an echo.
Yeah, go ahead. We can hear you.
Okay, I was done. I was hearing an echo during the last few seconds of that.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking to Matt Rozsa. He's a writer at Salon Magazine. We're talking about libertarianism and autism. No, I've never been diagnosed on the spectrum, I'll say that. But I do have a lot of libertarian friends who do kind of meet those qualifications. And you know, you yourself, though, are diagnosed?
Yes.
And what are the traits that you exhibit and what are the traits that, how would you define autism just for our listeners who may not know what that means?
I'm glad you asked. There is a definition from the Mayo Clinic that I'm going to quote because it is very succinct and effective. Autism spectrum disorder is a condition related to brain development that impacts how a person perceives and socializes with others, causing problems in social interaction and communication. The disorder also includes limited and repetitive patterns of behavior. Now, that is just a very beginning. There is an expression used in the autism community that if you know one person with autism, you only know one person with autism. In many cases, there are physical manifestations. For instance, some autistic people have tactile disorders that make them hypersensitive to touch. I have hand-eye coordination, balance, and fine motor skill issues, so I've never been able to drive. And there are people, I also have trouble with eye contact. There are people on the autism spectrum who are hypersensitive to sound. There are people whose need for regimented behavior is much more severe than mine. And I want to emphasize autism and neurodivergent are not the same thing. Neurodivergent simply means anyone whose neurology is not typical. So, for instance, in one of my recent Salon articles, I discuss reading differently, people with different approaches to reading. And as an example, there's dyslexia, and dyslexia is not the same thing as autism, but if you are dyslexic, you are also neurodivergent.
Interesting. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking to Matt Rozsa. He's a writer at Salon Magazine. We're talking about libertarianism and autism. But how would you describe your political philosophy, Matt?
I would describe it as leftist.
And what does that entail?
Ask me about a specific issue.
Well, I mean, you know, could you, I mean, as a libertarian, I sort of describe myself broadly as a believer in limited government, in individual liberty, a government that, if it is to exist, should be committed to defending the rights of the citizens, the natural rights of the citizens as defined in the Bill of Rights, as well as, you know, a broader spectrum of rights, you know, that is harder to define, but, you know, enumerated within the confines of the Ninth Amendment. So, you know, to me, a libertarian is someone who believes in the sovereignty of the individual, and that taxation being theft, you know, if it is to exist, should be kept to the absolute minimum possible to maintain public services in order to have courts, cops, and the military with little else, everything else being done by a voluntary society. So that's, you know, broadly how I would define myself as a libertarian. But how would you describe yourself as a leftist?
I would say different leftists have different ways of describing themselves, given that you use the caveat that this is merely how you would define libertarianism in your case. I will use a similar caveat in my case in terms of leftism. I agree with Franklin Roosevelt's idea about there being an economic bill of rights to which every human being is entitled. I believe that freedom has to include the ability to provide for yourself, the ability to afford food and education and opportunity. I say this, again, in part because I'm on the autism spectrum, and I've written about how, as someone on the autism spectrum, I've experienced economic and other forms of institutional discrimination all through my life. And this is something that many of my libertarian friends who are on the spectrum have also experienced. It's actually one of the reasons I marvel at our ideological differences, because even though we have similar life experiences, we have drawn different ideological conclusions from those experiences. And a few years ago, I wrote an article, and I'm guessing that I think the title was something to the effect of "I'm liberal because I'm autistic" or something like that. And I discuss the hardships that I've experienced in my life. You know, the essence of knowledge, the Enlightenment philosophers taught, is to base conclusions off of your own experiences. And based on my experiences, the pragmatic declarations made by FDR in 1944 about guaranteeing economic liberty as at least a preliminary step toward providing some kind of happiness and opportunity for all, that makes sense. It makes sense based on what I've lived. It makes sense based on what I've studied. And beyond that, I try to be humble. I don't have a grand vision for human society. I just believe that there is immediate suffering that can be alleviated.
And alleviated by the government.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, the first rule of economics is that there aren't enough resources to satisfy all of the needs and wants of every single individual, right? Because, you know, our wants and our needs are nearly infinite, right? So, I mean, you know, in terms of what I, you know, claim to need, you know, versus what I actually need, that can be very difficult to define. But in terms of what my wants are absolutely infinite, but there aren't enough resources to satisfy all of them. I think there's a Thomas Sowell quote where he says the first rule of economics is scarcity, and the second rule or the first rule of politics is to disregard the first rule of economics. You know, we kind of, as libertarians, make the joke when liberals argue for raising the minimum wage. They say, "Oh, we want a $15 minimum wage." You know, how would you answer someone who would respond by saying, "Well, why not a $100 minimum wage?" Would you think it was ridiculous if someone were to say that the minimum wage should be $1 million an hour? Would you find that laughable?
I guess I'm curious, because this conversation, as I was informed it would be, mm-hmm. would be about autism issues. So I'm curious where your question is going in terms of that subject.
Well, I just, you know, I wonder, you know, your psychology on this one. And because, you know, you made the point earlier about your acceptance of FDR's worldview of freedom from want. So I'm just trying to kind of understand, like, you know, why you think that the government should, you know, try and fulfill those wants and needs. You know, why is that argument so compelling to you? Because to me,
I believed I'd already addressed that in mm-hmm. my answer, but mm-hmm. Through my own experience, I am the Americans with Disabilities Act is an example of the government intervening in a way that helps people with disabilities. There are plenty of civil rights laws that restrain businesses, and that, you know, union protections assist me as a disabled person. And that's just my own experience. Obviously, I don't want to delve into the intimate details of my private life, nor do I think should anyone who is disabled. But I know other people with disabilities, both autism and general neurodivergent and physical disabilities, who benefit from government programs. And so I support those programs.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking to Matt Rozsa. He's a writer at Salon Magazine. He describes himself as a leftist and is talking a little bit about being on the spectrum, libertarians versus liberals. So do you find that interesting then, that people who share a common, you know, a neurodivergence can arrive at such wildly different political philosophies?
Oh, absolutely. That's why I reached out to you. And like I said, I had and have no idea about what your neurological situation is. All I can say is that we've always gotten along. You've always been friendly to me. I've always hoped that I've been friendly to you. And consequently, the fact that you're a libertarian and I am left-leaning, those things, I think that says that people with different ideologies can be civil to each other and even develop friendships with each other, regardless of those ideological differences.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think in the case of neurodivergent people, why they reach different conclusions than me, I don't know. If I knew, then I would be, I mean, I don't. That's why I'm here. I acknowledge the limits of my own knowledge there.
Ah, yes. Acknowledging the limits of your own knowledge is a very libertarian trait there, Matt. So you might not want to.
I would say it's Socratic. Socratic. And Socrates may not have been a libertarian.
Maybe not. If you're just tuning in to the Wake Up America show, we're speaking to Matt Rocha. He's a liberal writer at Salon Magazine. We're talking about libertarianism and autism. There was an article that came out back in 2011 on Reason Magazine that I shared with you yesterday, Matt, with the title called Being Libertarian May Cause Autism, and it was based around a column called The Science of Libertarian Morality, where they did some research from a psychologist named Jonathan Haidt. They talk about how libertarian moral thinking differed from that of standard-issue liberals and conservatives. You see, and I'm sure you understand this, that libertarians are not conservatives, and libertarians are not liberals. One of the best ways to illustrate that is with the sort of this scale that they created called an empathizer systemizer scale. But one of the more intriguing results from this report showed where they talk about like the tendency to empathize, which is defined as the drive to identify another person's emotions and thoughts and to respond to these with an appropriate emotion, and to systemize, or to drive to analyze the variables in a system and to derive the underlying rules that govern the behavior of the system, libertarians are the only group that scored higher on systemizing than empathizing, and they scored a lot higher. So the author goes on to suggest that like systemizing would be something that's more characteristic of a masculine or a male brain, right? Systemizing. Whereas, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, you would have a more female brain where you'd have a more empathic sort of view of things. So they say liberals have the most feminine cognitive style and libertarians the most masculine. What do you think about looking at these traits in a sort of a gender scale? Would you agree with that kind of a view of things?
I would not agree with that. I will also say I did not see the email in which you sent me this article, so I have not had an opportunity to look at it, and I try to reserve my thoughts and reactions until I've had a chance to absorb what I've read. Mm-hmm. Did not see that particular email.
No, it's
I can
okay.
Look at it now.
No, it's fine. So yeah, I sent it over to you yesterday. The link was to Reason Magazine. You could also type it in the Google search if you like. We've got a little bit.
Oh, I already have it pulled up.
Okay, good.
I will say that this person, this journalist, is Ronald Bailey. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Bailey writes, based on my anecdotal experience, I have long had a personal opinion that autism correlates with having highly intelligent parents. In my view, a sort of assortative mating accounts, and if I mispronounce that, I apologize, assortative mating accounts for an increasing rate of autism because after the 1960s, more intelligent women got to go to college where they met and married similarly intelligent men. This tendency was especially strong among engineering and science students. Now I can point to some research that bolsters this long-held private opinion. It's interesting that the article that you shared, which was written 11 years before our conversation, and I just encountered it now, actually was inspired by a similar thought germination process as the one that led me to reach out to you, which is that, led me to think of this approach to the interview, which is that you have anecdotal experiences and then you try to extrapolate from those experiences. And the question is, to what extent can you do so in a way that accurately generalizes? And to what extent are you unaware of the degree to which the quirks of your and variables about your own life influence and distort the accuracy, or I guess you'd say the representative nature of your experience?
You can text the show this morning if you're just tuning in at 573-319-1586. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this discussion that we're having on the individualism to collectivism scale. Another part of this conversation that Ronald Bailey stoked that's linked in his original piece at the top of this article. He says that, not surprisingly, on the individualism to collectivism scale, libertarians are more individualistic than either liberals or conservatives. When it comes to groups, libertarians are less identified with their communities than are liberals or conservatives. And like liberals, they are less identified with their country. But like conservatives, they don't identify with people, quote, all over the world. And it turns out that libertarian independence with others is associated with weaker feelings of love than liberals or conservatives have for friends, family, romantic partners, and generic others.
Where are you reading this?
This is
in the same
article. So it's linked at the top of that article of libertarianism and autism from the Science of Libertarian Morality. That's at the very, very tippity top, the article, Science of Libertarian Morality. And if you scroll down near the halfway point, he talks about this, but how might the emotional lives of libertarians affect their morality? Not surprisingly, not much. The emotional lives of libertarians is what we're talking about here. And the different types of love scale. Independence from others is associated with weaker feelings of love than liberals or conservatives have for friends, family, romantic partners, and generic others. So knowing that, that autism, manifests itself in different ways, and that, you describe yourself as a leftist, can you talk to us a little bit about how you feel about, what is your empathy? How would you rate your level of empathy or love for others, or, your feelings for family, friends, or romantic partners?
According to what scale?
Well,
scale
of 1 to 10? From individualism to collectivism. Yeah. So, do you also kind of share those sorts of more libertarian traits in terms of, that you look more, that you have trouble empathizing, or do you feel yourself having strong feelings of empathy?
Well, the thing is, I went to the link and I clicked on individualism, collectivism scale. And when I did, it says this XML file does not appear to have any style information associated with it. So I'm trying to find another frame of reference so that I can offer a quantified answer to a question that I will say seems somewhat unquantifiable.
It does seem so. It looks like it's a 16 item scale, collective or individualism collective scale known as the culture
orientation
scale. I just found it, Matt. I'm going to go ahead and just respond to your email there with a link to it. So let's see if I can pull it up. It's a PDF there. I'm not sure if it'll open for you because it looks to be something of an extension. But if you type in individualism and collectivism scale or the culture orientation scale, you will find a link to a white paper on this one. And in it is a 9-point scale where they talk, where they ask questionnaires, turn things of for 1 through 4. Here's one of the examples. I'd rather depend on myself than others. Yes or no. I rely on myself most of the time. I rarely rely on others. Number 3, I often do my own thing, or my personal identity, independent of others, is very important to me. So I guess, without, knowing that we don't have the time to get into, the intricacies of this scale here, would you say that, that you probably have, a stronger sense of empathy than many autistic people, knowing, that you're, that you have achieved or that you have a more collectivist view of things? Would that mean that you probably have stronger feelings of empathy overall?
I'm reminded of a quote from Return of the Jedi by Admiral Akbar. It's a trap. And I was first actually hinted to that when I clicked on the study and it read a bunch of code gibberish. And then I was like, well, now how am I going to know this frame of reference? And now I'm looking at this frame of reference. And my initial thought is that I disagree with the premise of this study. I disagree with the concept. I think the people who designed this study, in my view, used a set of parameters in understanding reality that I disagree with. Therefore, I view your question as, I'm not going to speculate as to what answer you're trying to get. I can certainly say that my response is, I don't judge people who are autistic and have arrived at libertarian conclusions in their political philosophy. I think they should reciprocate that in terms of people with their own conclusions. As long as said conclusions are not directly harmful. And obviously, I know there are extreme libertarians who would say that anyone who supports government activity in the private sector is advocating for extreme harm. That assertion is self-evidently absurd. By that logic, Thomas Jefferson was advocating for extreme harm when he advocated public education. But certainly, I think autistic individuals, regardless of their perspective, should try to not disparage each other for reaching different conclusions based on their own individual experiences.
Do you have a view of libertarians in general, though? Not just, you know, autistic people who happen to be libertarians, but do you have a view of libertarians in general?
A view of libertarians in general, in what sense? Well, I have friends who are libertarians, so obviously I don't have a hate toward libertarians. I have a strong philosophical disagreement with libertarians.
I see.
I believe libertarians, I'm going to elaborate on that. Mm. I believe libertarians are incorrect in their diagnosis of what ails society. I do not believe that government is inherently good or inherently evil. It is merely a tool. It is a tool that can be used in any number of ways. And I particularly think that when it comes to social welfare programs, government has primarily, though not entirely, been a force for good. The same thing can be said about government in any other aspects of the ways in which it can interfere or assist in life. So that is my philosophy.
Definitely a discussion that I'd love to have with you again as well, Matt. I know you and I have had conversations in the past about some of your writings on Grover Cleveland, who is something of a libertarian icon and hero to us, but that's something that we won't have time to get into in more detail today. But I hope you will definitely come back on the show. Matt Rozsa, writer at Salon Magazine. Is there anything else that you think our listeners should know before I let you go?
Yes. I hope that this clip will be available in its own little thing and that I will post it on Twitter and Facebook. That's what I do.
Absolutely. I will cut the clip for you after the show. It'll be available later today. Matt Rozsa is a writer at Salon Magazine, and we appreciate it. He's a friend of the show. Thank you very much for coming on. We'll definitely have you back. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. What did you think of Matt Rozsa? Send us a text, 573-319-1586. Again, you can text the show, 573-319-1586. All right. Well, we didn't get to have time to get into a big philosophical debate. I think he didn't want it to go down that path. And that's fine. We will have discussions with lots of different liberals as well as debates. So I hope that you enjoyed that discussion. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the Wake Up America show on wakeupamericashow.com.